Tonight's story has to do with a wing walker who becomes involved with the wife of his pilot. Well, can there be a worse setup for disaster? Our cast is certainly very auspicious. Paul Frees and Barney Phillips. And our story from NBC, Short Story by William Faulkner, comes from April 11, 1951. This is Honor.
NBC presents Short Story. Tonight, William Faulkner. He writes of a fabulous county in his home state of Mississippi. He writes of violence in the Southland and of the major passions which separate man from man and man from himself. He's one of the four Americans ever to win the Nobel Prize for Literature, William Faulkner. In other times, he has written of a different group of men, that restless, rootless group of young Americans who came back from the First World War and became the barnstorming pilots of aviation's infancy. Faulkner caught their language and their manners and their strange code of ethics in a manner that no other writer did. He put it all down in a novel called Pylon, and in the short story you'll hear tonight, Honor. But first, this message from the United States Marine Corps. The United States Marine is a very adaptable man. His adaptability may be largely attributed to the variety of assignments he performs in the Marine Corps and the variety of circumstances in which he serves. The Marine's assignments may take him into the fields of communication, artillery, aviation, intelligence, administration, on through a long line of more than 400 interesting specialties. The Marine is given responsible jobs to do in unusual and often unpredictable circumstances. As a result, he develops unshakable confidence and a deep sense of responsibility. These are characteristics which make him a good Marine or a good civilian, and in either case, a better American. Here now, Honor by William Faulkner.
Miss West was a good kid. She practically ran the Reinhardt Motor Company single-handed. Though how she put up with Reinhardt, I could never find out. He was frog-eyed with a big cigar stuck in his mouth. But Miss West was a good kid. Now and then when I had a blow off steam, she and I'd have lunch at the dairy place across the street, and I'd tell her about him. About the women. Oh, they're the worst.
The women?
Yeah, they're the worst.
Oh? What happened this morning?
Now, remember that call to demonstrate a car for Mr. John somebody or other?
Yes.
So I pull up at the address, and there they were. Whole squadron of them sitting up on the porch waiting for me.
Women?
Yeah. All sizes and shapes. They poured down the steps and piled into the car. Said they wanted to go shopping, downtown.
So you drove them shopping?
Dodged around in traffic, hunting a place to park, only there wasn't any. This Mrs. John, whatever her name was, kept saying, "Now, John insisted that I try this car, but I'm going to tell him it's foolish to buy a car that's so difficult to find parking space for as this one appears to be."
Poor you. What'd you do, Buck?
I let him out at some store and drove off and left him there.
Oh, wait till Mr. Reinhardt hears about this.
Oh, does he have to?
Well...
Oh, I don't know. I can't sell automobiles or anything else.
Buck.
Yeah?
You've had three or four other jobs this year, haven't you?
Where'd you hear that?
I don't know. Somebody.
Must have been somebody who knows me.
You were a pilot in the war, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, why'd you quit flying?
No reason.
Why don't you go back to it?
No reason.
Well, as you say yourself, you're not much good at selling automobiles.
Here's your coffee.
Oh, thank you.
Why don't you look for a job you'd be interested in?
I don't know. Guess I never learned to do anything interesting, except maybe to fly.
You do like flying.
Flying? It suits me right down to the ground. Sugar?
Thanks.
I had 4 years of flying, two in the war and two afterward. I stayed on after the armistice as a test pilot. That's when I took up wing walking.
Don't you want sugar?
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Did you say wing walking?
A fella named Waldrip and I used to hide out in the clouds at about 3,000 feet. I'd climb out on the wing and muscle around.
Whew, makes me dizzy to think about it.
Army life gets pretty dull in peacetime. Nothing to do but lay around. Lie your head off all day about how you won the war. Playing poker all night. Like more coffee?
No, thanks. You coming back to the office?
Hey, you know, I think maybe I'll take the afternoon off.
I won't tell Mr. Reinhardt.
You're a good kid, Miss West. Good kid. I just drifted around town that afternoon, going no place special. And I ran into one of my war buddies. His name was Jack.
Hey, Buck, what are you doing these days?
Oh, selling cars. Or trying to sell them.
I don't know of a good wing walker looking for a job, do you?
Huh? What kind of job?
Barnstorm and Circus. Bird named Harris owns it. Another bird named Rogers runs it.
Here in town?
Yeah, you know that airfield out beyond the golf links?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they do most of their stunting for state fairs. Carnivals, you know. And Rogers does most of the flying.
He a good pilot?
Yeah, one of the best.
You know what, Jack? I might take the job myself.
You kidding?
No, I mean it.
Hey, look, I'll give you a note to this bird, Rogers.
Yeah, I'd sure appreciate
it. Yeah, I'll write it on the back of an envelope.
He a good guy, this Rogers?
Oh, one of the best. Yeah, except for his wife. They say she's not happy with him.
Oh, so's your old man.
Honest, that's what they say.
That was how I met her. Now, I've known lots of these women. Flighty, passionate, good-looking. Plenty of flyers caught them during the war. Caught them with a set of silver wings. Yeah. Then had a run out on them first chance they got. I felt safe. I took the note to Rogers that same afternoon.
Jack thinks mighty highly of you.
Yeah, we knew each other in the Army.
I got a job open, all right, for a good wing walker.
Well, I'm a good one.
In that case, the job's yours.
Yeah? When do I start?
Tomorrow morning. There's a fair upstate. We'll fly up there around 10 o'clock, put on a show in the afternoon.
Oh, well, in that case, I better go back and tell the boss I'm leaving.
Why don't you come around for dinner tonight?
Tonight?
Wife would be mighty happy to have you.
Well, I...
7 o'clock?
Yeah, 7 o'clock. Mr. Reinhardt in?
Oh, he's in conference. I didn't expect to see you again today.
Oh, I came back to see Reinhardt.
Hey, you can't go in there.
You're a good kid, Miss West, but I gotta see Reinhardt.
I told you, he's busy.
And you'll find our new 1921 model is beyond anything ever previously dreamed of.
Mr. Reinhardt.
What is it, Monahan? Can't you see I'm busy?
How much notice do you want to write me off?
Write you off? What are you talking about? Look here, Monahan.
I'm quitting. Will one day be notice enough?
You've been with us 3 weeks, Monahan. Not long enough to learn what that word private means on my door.
3 weeks is pretty good, Mr. Reinhardt. Within 2 days of a record. Will one day be enough notice?
1 minute will be enough.
Yes, Mr. Reinhardt.
Miss West, we're letting Mr. Monahan go. Send him to the cashier.
Don't bother. Keep it and buy yourself a hoop. I kind of expected Mrs. Rogers would be one of those long, dark, snake-like women surrounded by ostrich plumes and dime store incense, you know, smoking cigarettes on a divan, but I was wrong. She wore an apron and one of those pale, squashy dresses, and after dinner, I helped her with the dishes.
Howard phoned me this afternoon. Told me you'd be coming out for dinner.
Did he?
Mm-hmm. I expect you're finding this a pretty dull way to spend an evening, having to dry dishes. I imagine you'd rather go out to dance.
Why do you think that?
Oh, I don't know.
Smart, don't I look like I could do anything else but go out dancing?
Oh, don't you?
It was Rogers who stretched out on the divan while his wife sat on the floor with her head resting back against his knees. All the lights were out. Her face was warm in the firelight.
I know you've had a dull evening, Mr. Monahan.
No, not a bit of it.
I told Howard you just have to take us as we are. First as well as later. Are you sorry?
No. No, that's just how I'd want it.
We don't expect you to enjoy this any more than we enjoy it. It's because we're so broke. We're just an aviator.
That's all right, too.
Howard's asleep.
Yeah. Look, I better be going.
Oh, I'm afraid I can't move my head without waking him.
No, no, don't disturb him. I'll find my way out.
Good night, Mr. Monahan.
Yeah. Thanks for dinner.
We'll see you again.
Sure.
Soon?
Yeah, soon. She looked about 16, especially in an apron. She even bought an apron for me to wear, and the three of us had cooked dinner.
When Howard told me you were a flyer that first afternoon, I said, not another wing walker. Didn't I, Howard?
That's right.
When you're choosing a family friend, I said, why don't you choose a man we can invite to dinner a week ahead and not only count on his being here, but on his taking us out and spending his money on us? But Howard had to choose one who was as broke as we are.
Hey, I got an idea. I want you both to have dinner with me this week, huh? Downtown. We could take in a show.
Oh, I didn't mean that like it sounded.
No, of course you didn't.
Well, that wasn't a hint to take us out.
Oh, I know it wasn't.
Well, Howard, we'll have to find Buck a girl.
That's an idea.
He's going to get tired of just us.
No, that'll never be.
Do you want us to find you a girl, Buck? Do you?
No. No, thanks.
My wife's just like all the other wives, trying to find a wife for every bachelor.
I guess that's a sign of a happy marriage.
Think so?
Sure. She wants everybody else to be as happy as she is.
As happy as I am? That's right, Buck. I wish every wife was as happy as I am.
Got so after a while when there was a high step or any of those little things which men do for women that means touching them. She turned to me like it was me was her husband and not him. Got so I was going out to their place for dinner two or three times every week.
Yeah?
Oh, Howard.
Oh, it's you, huh?
Maybe I got the date wrong, huh?
What?
Well, I mean, weren't you expecting me for dinner?
Sure, come on in.
Hey, something wrong?
Oh, wife and I are having a little quarrel. You can sit and listen.
Oh, but Howard,
we have lots of these quarrels. Time you heard one.
I just can't stand it. I've tried and I've tried, but I just can't stand it. Hello, Buck.
Oh, Mildred.
I tell you, Howard, I can't stand it. I just can't take it anymore.
You know what my insurance rates are. If something happened, where would you be?
Where am I anyway? Tell me that.
Ah, now look.
I mean it. What tenement woman hasn't gotten more than I've got?
Well, maybe you shouldn't have married a flyer.
Why don't you quit flying?
Quit?
Why not? Do something that you can get a decent insurance rate, like other men. Sit down, Buck.
No, thanks. I guess I better be getting along.
I'll come to the door with you.
Good night, Mildred.
Have dinner with us tomorrow night, Buck.
Maybe.
I'm sorry about this, Buck.
Ah, forget it.
We have lots of these squabbles. They don't mean anything.
Look, Howard, I got a little steak hidden away. I guess because I've eaten so much of your grub, I haven't had time to spend it. So, well, you know, if it's anything urgent...
No, no.
Of course, I wouldn't try to muscle in where
I wouldn't if I were you. See you at the field tomorrow.
Yeah, sure. See you at the field. I didn't see Mildred for almost a week. Didn't hear from her. I saw him every day.
We got a special job next month.
Yeah? What is it this time?
Amusement park, a carnival. They phoned in this morning, asked if we could do a wing walking exhibition.
Oh, that's us.
Only wish we'd get more jobs like this.
They get sick of hopping passengers, taking up yokels who want a cheap thrill.
Yeah. How's Mildred these days?
Mildred? She's away.
Oh?
She's on a visit at her mother's.
Oh. For the next few weeks, I was with Howard every day, but he never mentioned her name again. Then one afternoon, he had a phone call. It came just as he was going out to the field to hop some passengers.
Dinner? Well, I'll ask him. Yeah, see you later. That was Mildred on the phone.
Mildred? When'd she get back?
Just now. She asked for you.
Did she?
Want you to come out for dinner tonight.
Tonight?
We'll expect you around 7. See you later. I got work to do.
I'm back, Buck. I'm back. Don't wait until tonight. Come out this afternoon. Please, Buck. Come out now.
Hey, Harris?
Yeah?
I'm taking the afternoon off.
Oh, sure, Buck, sure.
Say, when Howard comes back, tell him I couldn't make it for dinner. She was alone, reading before the fire.
Buck. Oh, Buck.
It was like gasoline from a broken line blazing up around you. A couple of days later, Howard and I took a plane up for some practice. When I got out on the wing, I looked back at Howard's face behind the windscreen, wondering what he knew. He must have found out almost at once. She didn't have any discretion at all. She'd say and do things, insist on sitting close to me, looking at me in that way she did, even when Howard was looking at both of us. I unfastened my belt and crawled out on the wing, looked back at his face and wondered what he was thinking. How much did he know or suspect? I wondered. Got so I'd stall around every afternoon till I saw Howard was lined up for the rest of the day, and then I'd give some excuse to Harris and beat it. One afternoon, I was all ready to go and waiting for Howard to take off. When he came across the field to me.
Buck.
Yeah, Howard?
I'll go off. I want to see you.
Yeah, sure, Howard. What is it?
You haven't been out to the house for dinner since Mildred got back.
That's right, I haven't.
Come out tonight.
Tonight? Oh,
tonight,
I'm afraid I...
Buck.
Sure, Howard. Tonight. I knew then that he knew. When I got to the house, they were waiting for me. She had on one of those squashy dresses. She came and put her arms around me and kissed me, with him watching. Mildred.
Buck. Buck, I'm going with you.
What?
That's right, Buck.
We've talked it over, and we've both agreed that we couldn't love one another anymore after this.
What are you saying?
Howard can find a woman he can love. A woman that's not bad like I am.
Is that right, Howard?
That's right, Buck.
He sat there looking at me and at her. And I was thinking that Howard and I were in a plane, and I was out on a wing, and I just found that Howard had thrown the stick away and was flying around the rudder alone. And he knew that I knew the stick was gone. So it was all right now, whatever happened.
Buck.
She was holding back and looking up in my face.
Buck. Don't you love me anymore?
What?
If you love me, say so.
But Mildred...
I've told him all about us. I've told him everything.
Oh, Mildred, Mildred!
Say it, Buck. Say you love me.
What do you want me to do, Howard?
What do I want you to do?
Yeah. Will you give her a divorce?
Oh, Buck! say it. You've been lying to me. You didn't mean what you said.
Mildred.
Oh, what have I done? What have I done?
Sure, Mildred, I love you.
Well, then tell Howard. Tell him what you say to me when we're alone. Oh, go ahead. He knows everything.
Everything? Do you, Howard? Do you know everything?
Doesn't matter. You love her?
Yes, Howard.
You be good to her?
Yeah.
You want to marry her?
Yes, Howard, yes!
When I finally got away, the divorce was all settled. It was as easy as that. Next morning, when I reached the field, Harris, the bird who owns the place, was waiting for me.
You didn't forget, Buck. You got that special job today.
Special job?
Hey, you and Rogers. You're doing a wing-walking show for that carnival.
I won't fly with Howard today.
What are you talking about?
Better ask him.
But if he agrees to fly you, will you go up?
All right. If he agrees. Howard said he'd fly me. And that's when I realized he must have remembered about the job all the time. He'd laid for me. Sucked me in. I waited until Harris left the field, and then I turned on him. All right, Howard. So this is why you were so mealy-mouthed last night, huh?
What are you talking about?
Well, you got me now, haven't you? Right where you want me, out on a wing.
Take this stick yourself.
Huh?
You do the flying. I'll do the wing walking.
Yeah, sure you feel good. You got me. Come on. Why don't you grin on the outside of your face? Come on!
Let me have your shoes. I haven't got any with rubber soles. Give me your shoes and I'll do your tricks.
No. All right, get in the seat. We're going up.
You're not afraid?
What does it matter? Guess I'd do the same thing in your place.
You really going through with it?
Yes, I'm going through with it. Job was over an amusement park, a carnival. Must have been 25,000 ants down there, watching us. I was a little crazy. I went back to the center section and cast the rope loose where it loops around the forward jury struts. I got set against it and looked at Howard. I gave him the signal. I was a little crazy. Wires began to whine. I was looking straight down at the ground, down at the ants. Then the wires were whistling proper and he gunned it. The ground began to slide back under the nose. I waited until it was gone and I couldn't see anything but sky. Then I let go one end of the rope and held my arms out as she zoomed into the loop. I wasn't trying to kill myself. I wasn't even thinking about myself. I was thinking about him, about Howard. Trying to show him up like he'd shown me up. Give him something he must fail at. Like he'd given me something I'd fail at. Yeah, I was trying to break him. We were over the loop before he lost me. The ground had come back and then the pressure went off my soles and I lost my balance. I was falling. I made a half somersault and was just going into the first turn of a flat spin with my face to the sky when... Something had banged me in the back. For a second, I'd been completely out. Then I opened my eyes. I was lying on my back, on the top wing, my head hanging over the back edge. I was too far down the slope of the camber to bend my knees over the leading edge. I could feel the wing creeping under me, but I couldn't dare move. I knew if I tried to sit up against the slipstream, I'd go off backward. I could see the tail and the horizon, that we were in a shallow dive. I could see Howard standing up in his cockpit, unfastening his belt. I could turn my head a little more and see that when I fell off, I'd missed the fuselage altogether. Or maybe, when I fell off, I'd missed the fuselage and hit with my shoulder. I lay there with the wing creeping under me,
creeping. Feeling my shoulders beginning to hang over space. Counting my backbones as they crept over the edge. Watching how it crawled forward along the fuselage toward the front seat. I watched him for a long time. He was inching himself along against the pressure. His trouser legs whipping. A long time. After a while, I saw his legs slide into the front cockpit. Then his body. His arms reached up for me. I felt his fingertips touch me. His hands caught me. And I felt him pulling me back. Back. Back to safety.
Buck! Buck!
Hard?
I was afraid I'd be too late.
How'd you find out I was leaving?
I went to the airfield. Harris told me. Here, this is for you.
Yeah? What is it?
It's a note from her. From Mildred.
Oh?
What are you doing?
I don't want to read it, no matter what's in it.
Well, don't be a fool.
What? What?
Well, bye, Hard.
What'll I tell Mildred?
Oh? Tell her I say goodbye. That's all. Goodbye. That's all. They got a kid now, Howard and Mildred. Boy of six. Howard wrote me. Months afterward, the letter caught up with me. You know, I'm the kid's godfather. Funny to have a godfather that's never seen you, and that you'll never see.
You have heard Honor by William Faulkner. The adaptation was by Vincent McConnor. In tonight's cast, Buck was Paul Frees. Miss West was Helen Andrews. Jack was Tom Holland. Rogers was Barney Phillips. Mr. Reinhardt was Charles Anderson. Mildred was Lynn Allen. Harris was Jonathan Hole. Your announcer, Don Stanley. The director of NBC Presents Short Story is Andrew C. Love. Be with us again 2 weeks from tonight at this same time as NBC presents Short Story. At that time, a high-powered short story of life among the climbers and the sought-after. The story, Beautiful Summer in Newport by Felicia Gishiska. Hear it next week. And in the meantime, bear in mind this message from the United States Marine Corps. The United States Marine Corps is a highly complex organization. More than 400 different specialized skills are required to make it a smooth-working, swift-moving team. Operating as it does, the Marine Corps needs an adaptable young man, one who can become a specialist and at the same time develop into an all-around Marine capable of holding his own under any and all circumstances. In assigning his duties, his superiors are careful, taking into consideration his personal capabilities and aptitudes. The Marine is offered the opportunity to learn a great variety of skills. Soon he finds out that he can get along anywhere, that he has learned how to cope with almost any problem that he's likely to meet. A Marine's confidence and self-sufficiency represent a tremendous asset, not only to him, but also to his Corps and his country. The program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Maybe not quite the disaster you expected up there in the sky, but a kind of a domestic disaster on the ground. That was Honor. a William Faulkner story, dramatized by NBC Short Story, for broadcast of April 11th, 1951. We have a case for yours truly, Johnny Dollar, right after this. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bob Bailey became the voice of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, really was the best of the Dollars, and there were several over the years, beginning in 1949 and going till 1962. This one comes from just about 50 years ago tonight. It's one of the half-hour Dollars before they went to the five-part series, which actually was the best of all, as it turned out. Tonight, Johnny's assigned to escort a widow and a statue to a country estate. Sounds simple, doesn't it? And yet, in the wayward widow matter, it is not. This is yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from August 4th, 1957.
From Hollywood, it's time now for... Johnny Dollar.
John, this is Harry Branson of Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty Company.
Well, hi, Harry. What is it this time? Fraud, murder, arson?
No, none of them.
And what kind of a case has you in a dither this morning?
As a matter of fact, John, there is no case.
Oh, now, don't tell me you're spending company money on just a social call. Why, Harry?
Of course not. John, I wish you to take a motor trip with one of our very important clients.
Well, now, that depends.
Perhaps you've heard of her. Betty Charlene Winters.
No, but she sounds interesting.
She is. She's one of the most charming people. Very wealthy, too. John, you'll love her.
Oh, tell me more.
I want you to accompany her to her summer place on Lake Wawayande in northern New Jersey.
Sounds better all the time.
On expense account, of course, plus a fee of $1,000 for the week or any fraction thereof.
How can I lose? Harry, I'll grab the first train.
Bob Bailey. In the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. To the Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty Company, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Wayward Widow matter. Expense account item 1, $2,150, fare and incidentals, Hartford to Philadelphia. At his office on Walnut Street, Harry Branson looked as though he'd been just sitting there waiting for me ever since his phone call.
I'll get straight to the point, John.
Well, good, good. You don't mind if I sit down first, though, do you?
Oh, no, of course not. As I told you on the telephone, Mrs. Winters is one of our...
Mrs.? You didn't tell me that.
Her husband died just a short time ago.
Oh. And you, the old friend of the family, have been consoling the lovely widow, eh?
John.
Yeah, when you pick him, you really pick him, Harry. Hey, do you remember that little brunette you went for in the last case I handled with you?
John, that has nothing whatsoever to do with the matter at hand.
Yeah, okay, maybe not. Oh, but you sly dog. I'm betting right now you wish you could make this trip to the lake instead of me.
Of course I do. The beautiful forests and mountains up there at this time of the year?
Oh, sure. Just for the scenery. All right, now tell me all.
Well, the Winters were very wealthy. Betty Charlene Winters still is. Thanks, among other things, to the $500,000 she received on her late husband's double indemnity policy.
$500,000? You make this sound more attractive every minute.
John, will you...
You don't suppose the gorgeous babe helped him have an accident in order to collect that?
John, you are being absurd.
Am I? Tell me this. Was he older than she?
Yes, he was.
Uh-huh. And two make four.
And you are making no sense at all.
Hey, you have got a case on her, haven't you?
Will you please stop this nonsense and listen to me? Now, as I started to say, their lovely home is out between Ardmore and Bryn Mawr.
All right, go on.
Their home, which Mr. Winters inherited from his father and his grandfather before him, is a veritable art gallery.
I see.
But she is going to dispose of most of it to the better-known museums and galleries. She plans to sell the family mansion, too, just as soon as the estate is settled.
Doesn't go for the old stuff, huh?
You're quite right. Her taste is more for the modern.
That's the way I like him.
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. Go on, Harry.
Yes. Some of the things, however, she is taking up to the summer home on Lake Wawayanda.
Oh, well, now, wait a minute, Harry. Am I taking Betty Charlene up
Mrs.
there?
Winters, John, please.
Okay, I'll stay out of your territory for the time being.
But am I being hired to take her up to the lake or just some of this junk you've been talking about?
Both.
Ah.
You see, there's one thing in particular, some statue or other that she wants help with.
Statue?
So you and she and the statue will make the trip.
Now, that's the kind of chaperone I like. When do we start?
I must confess it's quite a relief to get out of that office for a while.
Oh, don't try to kid me, Harry. The only reason you wouldn't let me find my own way out to this winter babe's home.
Babe? Honestly, John, you sometimes carry this levity much too far.
By the way, how long ago did her husband die?
About 4 months ago.
Oh, brother, you don't even wait for the ashes to get cold, do you?
John, I tell you that...
What did he die of?
Well, it was an accident.
Yeah?
In the car during a little trip that they were making south of here. He'd taken over the wheel from the chauffeur. They struck the abutment of a bridge over a tidal creek leading out to Delaware Bay.
Oh.
He was thrown out, and his body was carried into the bay. It was never recovered.
And so our tasty little dish was left with a $250,000 life insurance, a huge estate.
John, I simply will not listen to any more of this sort of nonsense. Besides, this is the driveway up to the house. Ah, lovely place, isn't it?
It was lovely. There must have been over an acre of perfectly tended lawns and gardens. And in the middle, atop a slight rise, was the main house, built of solid white stone of some sort. Old, too, but in beautiful condition. This was wealth, all right, and plenty of it. Harry's year-old car looked almost tawdry in this setting. We stopped, went up the broad front steps and across a wide porch and rang the doorbell.
Yes. Oh, Mr. Branson.
That's right.
Mrs. Winters is waiting for you in the sunroom.
Thank you. Come, John.
The butler led us through a large reception room, a huge living room. Both of them hung with beautiful prints and paintings. Through the walnut panel library with its high ceiling and hundreds of leather-bound books. Finally, after passing through a long corridor lined with statues and magnificent vases, we entered the spacious sunroom. There, standing in front of a chair at the window, was a chauffeur. And in the chair sat Betty Charlene Winters.
Mrs. Winters, may I present Special Investigator John Dollar.
Well, she was a cute little thing, that I will say. But instead of a young, blonde, and beautiful, let's face it, she was 70 if she was a day. All my dreams of a high old time during a week at a mountain lake suddenly vanished into thin air.
How nice of you to come, Mr. Dollar. Investigator, did you say, Mr. Branson?
Yes.
I see. Well, don't just stand there. Sit down and be comfortable, both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But is something wrong, Mr. Dollar?
No, not at all.
Oh, Haskins here is my chauffeur and general handyman.
Hi, Haskins.
Mr. Dollar?
I've just asked him to get the statue ready for our little trip. Oh, you may go now, Haskins.
Oh, thank you, madam.
No, wait, please. I wonder if I might see this thing we're taking up to the lake, Mrs. Winters.
Well, of course, it's right there in the corner behind you, Mr. Dollar. The cherub.
Cherub, huh? Oh, I... This?
Isn't it beautiful?
Well, it was a cherub, all right. About 4 feet high with a couple of doves fluttering around its feet. At least that's what I gathered from the garish paint on it. Believe me, it looked like something a third grader had slapped together as a joke on his modeling class. Now, I'm no artist, but so help me, I could have done better myself with a handful of mud and with my eyes closed.
No family piece, Mr. Dollar. Antique.
I started to say what I was thinking, but then Haskins lifted the atrocity off its pedestal and left with it.
Haskins has made a special box for it. He'll place it in the car so we can leave with it tomorrow. You are ready to leave on such short notice, aren't you, Mr. Dollar?
Well, now look, Mrs. Winters,
yes,
I...
Yes, his luggage is right outside in my car, Mrs. Winters.
Then, Eric, you may fetch it and put it in one of the guest rooms.
Very good, madam.
By the way, I hope you know how to drive a Pierce Arrow, Mr. Dollar.
Pierce?
Or did you think perhaps Haskins would drive us up to the lake?
Well, I don't know.
No, Haskins is leaving today on his vacation. And I wonder if he will come back.
Why do you say that, Mrs. Winters?
Oh, I've been having some trouble with him.
Oh? I thought you were always eminently satisfied with Haskins.
Until recently. Until the death of my husband. He's been... Well, if he doesn't come back, I shall have to replace him. But now, Mr. Branson.
Yes?
You're a bit of a rascal. You didn't tell me you were bringing a detective to go along with me.
Investigator, Mrs. Winters. Insurance investigator. Since the company wouldn't permit me to issue any special insurance on that thing.
But I'd thought you were going to bring me just some spare bodyguard.
I have known John for many years, Mrs. Winters, and I assure you...
Oh, now, don't apologize. I think this is fine. I just hadn't expected so much. Such a nice, good-looking young... But now come, Mr. Dollar, and I'll show you the rest of the house.
We spent the next hour or so on a tour of the place, and Mrs. Winters pointed out the various works of art destined for specific museums and galleries all over the country after she moved out, after the estate was settled. Then Eric caught up with us and announced that Haskins had crated the statue and placed it in the car. You know, I was curious about that car, so we went out to the garage and inspected it. It was a Pierce Arrow, all right. Vintage of 1928, complete with headlights on top of the fenders, and as bright and shiny as the day it was made. When I tried the starter, it purred like a contented kitten. With a bass voice, that is. Along about 5 o'clock, Mrs. Winters, with a sparkle in her eye, announced it was cocktail time. Harry, being a teetotaler, decided to leave, but not before I buttonholed him for a quick conference.
What doesn't make sense, John?
Oh, that silly statue, Harry. All the fuss over that piece of junk.
After all, John, with all the big policy she carries with us on the legitimate artwork, well, we just can't afford to displease her.
But if it had any real value...
Perhaps it does to her.
How can it? Unless she has a lot of jewelry hidden away in the base of it or something.
What, John?
A cocktail, she said, and I'm sure ready for him. Go on back to Philly, Harry, and wait for my final report. Well, I must admit that Betty Charlene Winters turned out to be a charming hostess, a very interesting conversationalist. Even long after dinner, over brandy and cigarettes, we chattered away like a couple of magpies. I didn't question her about the statue because I wanted to find out more about it on my own hook. Finally, about midnight, we decided to retire, had a nightcap, and went to our respective rooms. But instead of going to bed, I sat around and read for a few minutes, turned off the light, waited a few minutes more. Then, quietly, I slipped out of my room. That was a mistake. For as I reached the end of the long hall to the stairway, a door behind me suddenly opened. Huh? Who's there? I said, who's...
Of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
With the bigger, more impressive kaleidoscopic change of events on the world scene today, we sometimes forget the smaller kaleidoscope, the child's toy, with its ever-changing designs and color. The kaleidoscope is a fantastic experience for any child. That is, any child who can see. But what of those children who cannot experience the ecstatic pleasures of form and color in the ever-changing world about them? This problem has bothered many, and many such people have tried to solve it. One-time soldier in the United States Army, Robert Neiman, is one of them. Captain Kenneth Moyer, also of the Army, is another. Both men, while stationed in Japan recently, set about the task of raising funds for the purpose of providing eye examinations and operations for sightless Japanese children. In return for this gesture, Japanese eye surgeons did not charge for their services. For those children who could not be cured, Braille typewriters were purchased and donated for training purposes in the hope of giving a few more people useful lives. Both Neiman and Moyer worked independently of each other. Neither knew of the other's interest in such a gratifying project. Both have continued the work with enthusiasm. The results of their efforts, when a blind child sees again or perhaps for the first time, that is their reward. For a child... As for an adult, new sight leads to understanding. And understanding is a building block of freedom, the right of all men, everywhere.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Wayward Widow Matter.
When I came to, it was morning.
and I found myself in my pajamas lying comfortably in my bed in the guest room. But there was nothing comfortable about the lump on the back of my head. Whoever had slugged me out there in the hall had meant business. I got up painfully, went down the hall, and made a quick check of the room from which the attacker had surprised me. It was just another guest room. I showered, dressed, and went downstairs, where I found Mrs. Winters at the breakfast table. She was very much distressed over what had happened and suggested we go out and look in the trunk of the car immediately.
There now. Do you see, Mr. Dollar, the box with the statue in it hasn't been touched. I don't understand it.
Where is your chauffeur, Mrs. Winters?
Why, Haskins left on his vacation last evening. I thought I told you. But surely you don't think Haskins...
Well, you said you were having trouble with him. Maybe we'd better open that box to make sure
But it hasn't been touched. And I'm the only one who has to keep that little lock on it.
Yeah, I see. But now it's pretty logical to assume that whoever slugged me last night was interested in... Hey, Mrs. Winters, how long has Eric, your butler, been with you?
Why, Eric, the dear boy, has been with me for nearly 30 years. But good heavens, you surely don't suspect him of anything like this. He's a very fine person, Mr. Dollar, and a perfect gentleman. Oh, certainly more of a gentleman than my late husband ever was, in spite of his money.
Oh?
I must confess that although his death was a terrible shock, life has been a great deal easier for me since he passed away.
Just how do you mean that, Mrs. Winters?
No, well, why talk about it? Something that... Oh, why not talk about it? I married Charles for his money, Mr. Dollar. I'd never got any further than the front line of the chorus until he came along. Would you believe that I was a chorus girl?
Well, what's the matter?
And the wealth and the luxury that he could give me was very attractive, was very satisfying for a long, long time. But for the past 10 or 15 years, maybe more, he insisted that we just stay penned up in this musty old museum he called a home.
And what happened?
Well, all our friends were traveling around the world, seeing new places and new people. We just sat here looking at four walls and at each other. Except for a couple of blessed months up at the lake. You love the place up there, Mr. Dollar. It's new and fresh and modern. I had it built over his protests. People, young people came to see us, and it was such a relief from a... Well, I'm sorry. This must be so boring for you to hear.
Not at all.
Now, look. Why don't we call the police in about this thing that has happened to you? Come, we'll go right back into the house and
we'll... Wait a minute. No, let's not. A bunch of policemen prowling around would scare him off, whoever he is.
But suppose you're attacked again.
Well, at least I'm ready for it now.
I just don't like your taking this chance. Of course, we could leave. Go up to the lake.
Run away from him?
Well, yes.
Oh. Of course, it might prove whether he's interested in the statue. If he follows us, I mean.
Oh, dear. Why don't you let me call the police?
Only if you think they ought to be around here to protect the house while we're gone.
No, that isn't necessary. We have a very efficient burglar alarm system.
Well, it doesn't look as though it was working very well last night, does it? Unless it was someone in the house who attacked me. Who else is there besides you and Eric?
No one, except the cook.
Male or female?
Oh, no, Mr. Dollar, not Martha. Why, the poor dear is nearly as old as I am. And a real companion for me. Sounds strange, I know. But we're real nice friends.
All right, let's go back in, have our breakfast, pack our things, and go on up to the lake. Eric, who served the breakfast and whom I hadn't seen since dinner last evening, kept giving me a rather strange look. And as soon as breakfast was over, I quickly stuffed my things into my handbag and headed down to the garage. Eric was waiting for me there. He insisted that he put my things into the trunk of the car, which killed any chance I might have had to pry open the box with the statue. I started to question him about the night before. But as it turned out, my questions were quite unnecessary.
Yes, Mr. Dollar, it was I who carried you back to your room and put you to bed.
Oh?
You see, I was making a final inspection of the house, as I always do after everyone else has retired. I'm always concerned about the many valuable things we have.
I don't blame you.
Well, I was on my way up the main staircase when I heard you fall.
I was slugged.
Forgive me, sir, but when I found you there at the head of the stairs, I thought your condition was due to... You must pardon me, sir, but was due perhaps to having imbibed too much brandy after dinner?
Not a bit of it. Somebody barged out of that guest room and struck me from behind.
But I saw no sign of anyone else about.
You're sure?
Most certain, sir.
Was this fancy burglar alarm system you have turned on?
Yes, sir.
Well, then whoever did it either stayed in the house until this morning or knew the place well enough to get out without setting off the alarm.
But I don't see how that would be. Have you called the police, sir?
No, and we're not going to. Mrs. Winters and I are leaving for the lake just as quickly as possible.
But don't you think this is sufficiently serious to warrant...
Don't forget one thing, Eric. It was pretty dark in that hall. The attack might have been intended for you.
Good heavens. But why, sir?
I don't know.
Oh, dear.
Oh, there you are. Eric, you may fetch my bags from my room. Mr. Dollar and I planned the trip.
Very well, madam.
No, you don't know how glad I'll be to get there. Such a relief from this place. And all the things associated with it. I'll be so glad when Charles' estate is settled and I can sell this old house and just Martha and I can stay at the lake. Oh, I know all the paintings and things are all very fine and valuable. But I'm so tired of looking at them.
Well, then why do you take this so-called... I beg your pardon, the statue up to the lake?
Well, this is different.
Oh, yeah, I'll grant you it is a bit different from the other things that... Oh, well, let's talk about it along the way. But we didn't. Simply because I didn't bring up the subject again. Why not? Because a couple of pretty wild ideas had begun to peck away at the back of my brain. Ideas just crazy enough to have some basis in fact. The 1928 Pierce Arrow ran like a dream in spite of its advanced age. And Mrs. Winters, in spite of her advanced age, kept the conversation going at a merry clip. There was a sparkling, almost buoyancy about her. And the hunch that had hit me began to grow. We crossed the Delaware River at New Hope on Route 202, and in Lambertville, we stopped at the sign of the Flying Red Horse to gas up the car. That's item 2470. While the attendant was busy with that and checking the tires and battery and so forth, I made some excuse or other and stepped around to the telephone booth at the back.
Harry Branson here.
Harry, this is on the road on our way up to the lake. We ought to be there in a couple of hours. Meantime, I want you to drive out to the Winters home at Bryn Mawr again.
Oh, what for?
Just do it, right away. Then call me up at the lake.
Well, whatever you say, John, but I wish you'd tell me...
Gotta go now. Goodbye. The rest of the trip through the pretty North Jersey countryside was uneventful. And finally, north and east of the little town of Andover, we came to Lake Wauwatosa. We drove along a private road to the far end of it, and there, perched on a little cliff above a deep basin, was a real smart, modern brick and glass home.
Little hill and park in front of the garage.
Little hill? I just hope we can make it.
Right here.
I hope the brakes will hold, or this thing could roll right on back into the lake.
Oh, and the lake is so deep right there, nearly 100 feet. An old mine or something before the water came up.
Oh, this is a pretty dangerous driveway. Here now, let me help you.
Thank you. One of the first things I'm going to do is have this driveway built up and leveled off and a big stone wall built around it.
Yeah, you'd better. Careful now. This is pretty steep.
Oh, listen.
Yeah?
The telephone is ringing inside the house.
Oh, well, let me have the key and I'll go in and answer it.
I'll answer it. You can unpack the car while I...
I suspected the call was from me, but didn't want to say as much. So I opened the car trunk and proceeded to take out the luggage and the big, clumsy box from the statue. The box was heavy, very heavy, and I wondered how Haskins, the chauffeur, had been able to pick up and carry the statue so easily back in Bryn Mawr. I finally got the box perched on the edge of the car trunk when Mrs. Winters called to me.
It's for you, Mr. Dollar. It's Mr. Branson.
Oh, okay, I'll take it. Leaving the box there on this precarious perch, I went on up to the house.
Front hall, Mr.
Dollar. Oh, all right, thanks.
I'll go on out to the car and get my coat and purse.
Yeah. Johnny Dollar.
John, this is awful. Terrible. As I just told Mrs. Winters, this is... Well, I couldn't believe it. But how did you know?
How did I know what?
Eric, the butler.
Yeah?
Dead. He's dead. And John,
dead from what? How did he die?
He apparently fell down the main staircase. The poor cook, Martha, is the only other person in the house. She's beside herself.
Yeah, I'll bet she is.
But whatever made you suspect something was wrong out here?
Call the police, Harry. Make sure they look for a possible blow on the head that might have been delivered before he fell.
What?
Mr. Dollar is going to fall!
So long, Harry. Fell off the back of the car, huh?
Yes, the big box. I must have bumped it when I reached into the trunk of my weekend case.
Bounced right down into the lake, huh?
Yes, my beautiful little statue is at the bottom of the lake.
Oh, well, don't worry, Mrs. Winters. We'll get it back. I'll have a diver come up here.
No. No. It's all right. We'll leave it there.
Huh?
No, no, you were right. It'd only be another memory of the musty old house in Benoit. Peter has no place here where everything is so fresh and new and clean.
We'll get it back.
But it really had no actual value. You were right, Mr. Toller. It's better to just... Yes, we'll leave it there.
Sorry, Mrs. Winters, but that's where you're wrong.
Why, Mr. Toller?
We'll get it back, all right. And whatever's in it.
Oh, dear. I suppose I might have known.
Expense account item 3, $290 even for the diver who came over from New York and retrieved the box from the deep hole in the lake. Two boxes, as a matter of fact. One with Haskins' body in it, and the other with the body of Charles Winters, the body that was supposed to have been washed out to sea after a car accident. The story?
Well, of course. After Haskins got rid of Charles for me, I had to do something about him. Or rather, we did. Martha, you know. Such a wonderful friend.
Was Haskins the one who slugged me?
Yes. So foolish of him, wasn't it? But he'd heard Mr. Branson say you were an investigator, and it frightened him. Worried me a little, too. Well, he might have killed you, too, if Eric hadn't stopped him. And, of course, Eric knew that Haskins had unwittingly made this second box for his own body.
So now Eric's gone. Martha, huh?
Yes, she did it. But she had to put him away.
Oh, yeah.
You see, he was the one who took care of Haskins for us. And we couldn't have him around knowing everything. Oh, dear. Martha and I had planned so many wonderful things together. But now, oh, dear.
Expense account total, including incidentals and transportation back to Hartford, $365.50. Remarks? Well, I'd rather not say how I feel about a case like this, Harry. A whole crime wave by a couple of apparently sweet old ladies. The legal procedures, and there'll be plenty of them, are up to you and the company, as well as recovery of the insurance paid on poor old Charles Winters. Hey, next time, give me a case that doesn't turn my stomach, will you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a taste of the Old West and a taste of lead from a .38 Colt. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Harry Bartell, Eric Snowden, and Frank Gerstle. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Joe Walters speaking. United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Wow, it got pretty nasty there, knocking a few people off for insurance in the wayward widow matter. Even the statue doesn't come out so well. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from August 4th, 1957. Next up, it's Groucho, and You Bet Your Life. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.